This is exactly right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Almond Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Scotty, you ready?
Oh, Curdy B, I'm ready to laugh and laugh and laugh.
Two stray dogs cause $350,000 of damage when they break into a Texas car dealership.
It gives me pause, but I want to pet those dogs on this brand spanking new of the Bananas Podcast.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, welcome to the Bananas Podcast. I am Kurt Brownler. Over there is the man who will be petting 100 dogs in 2024, Scotty Landis.
That's right. Thank you for listening to the silliest little podcast there ever was. If you want to follow my progress as I try to pet 100 unique dogs, 100 dogs with their own personalities, I'm already four down. Curdy B was kind enough to make me a website called scottysgettingpetting.dog. It's up. You can see some photos. I can't always take photos of dogs because it's weird enough to ask people to pet their dog. And then to pull out a phone and go, I'm doing this for a podcast. But anyway, scottysgettingpetting.dog. It's a great thing. It's encouraging us to maybe do some charitable actions for dogs. It's fantastic.
And here's an announcement for you.
Okay.
Are you ready for this one?
Hit me.
Seattle, we're coming to you.
Thank God.
April 18th, the Bananas Podcast is coming to Seattle. April 18th, link in our stories and in our profile. It's actually a nighttime show.
Can you believe it?
Can you believe it?
Boys will show up. And I just wanted to say one thing before we get into our fantastic guest. Thank you to all the Bananimals who sent holiday cards and Christmas cards to our P.O. box. I opened every single one. And Curdy B, I'm talking like 250, 300 Christmas cards. I've seen
some
families.
God.
I mean, so many. We got gifts. We got pajamas. We got mugs.
Ooh, I want pajamas.
We got so much stuff. Oh, I got a pair for you, and they're XL, and they're glorious.
Yeah.
But thank you. You can send mail. We love the USPS. You can always send us mail that doesn't explode and isn't criminal in any way to P.O. Box 39348, Los Angeles, California, 90039. Just put it to the Bananas Podcast. I'll get it.
All right. And I'm very excited for our guest today. She's been on the podcast before.
True.
Second timer. She is a fantastic stand-up comedian and has a album out right now on Kill Rockstar Records, also my label as well, called Better Living Through Femistry. Please welcome the wonderful Andy Iwanzio.
Hi, y'all. Well, I'm glad to be back.
Well, we're glad to have you back.
I have like one update to give you since my last one, or do you want me to save it a little bit later?
No, give it to us now.
Fire
this
away.
Is the
shoot
update
from the hip.
Time.
So I think I mentioned this to Scotty and you before, but this will be on the pod.
Heck yeah.
When you had the banana phone, you befriended somebody by the name of Kirsten, and that is somebody who worked at the Baltimore School for the Arts.
Yes.
That I went to for 2 years. And then Kirsten Rook reached out to me and let me know that she had heard the episode and that, like, a bunch of the Baltimore School for the Arts people had too. And they started following all my comedy and then coming to my shows when I came into Baltimore.
No
and
way.
The last time I flunked out of Baltimore School for the Arts, just
yes.
like also like Tupac Shakur. So I'm actually I think I'm doing better flunked out. But the last time I went to Baltimore, I got to tour the Baltimore School for the Arts, and they gave me an alumni mug and an alumni magnet.
Fantastic.
So I have officially graduated from a high school I flunked out of because of the Bananas podcast.
Yes! Oh,
congratulations. What an achievement.
That is such a Bananas story, because it's like two of the our most popular cities is Baltimore and Portland, and we've united the two of them.
I'm on here the second time, and what I'm hoping for is the Community College of Baltimore County gives me my associate's degree.
Baltimore County Community College, or as they say in Maryland, UCLA, University of Catonsville, Luft of Arbutus. It's a prestigious university.
I will settle for being on the front cover of the community college catalog, you know, possibly hanging out with four other diverse people.
That's right. Just walking in front of a stone church that's not even on that campus. Just inclusive diversity somehow at every university. It's very odd how that happens.
And there's four of us pointing at a textbook, like, you know, four separate people do on a sidewalk, smiling and pointing.
That's all I did in college. I just kept pointing at textbooks.
Yep. I would get together with just three people of different races and just sit at a bench in the fall and point at a textbook.
And I'd laugh and laugh.
That's back when you had diversity on the community college catalog. And I think they do that at TSA now. They got like one of everybody. It's just, they got trans people now. I saw a trans person when I'm trans too. I feel like I need to say that. I wasn't just pointing somebody out. They had a pronoun pin and I was like, oh, that's great.
Yeah. At UMass, part of my, like, to graduate, I had diversity requirements and I had to take classes that fell, and that included just taking like Spanish or any of those. But yeah, I had to hit diversity requirements. And looking back, that seems very progressive, but also very odd that it was like, we're forcing you into diversity. But for a lot of people, that's probably the only way to get them in there.
Yeah, I support it. Do you go to
hear support
about
diversity? Kurt supports diversity. We want that to be known right at the top of the episode.
I don't want anybody saying I don't support it, because I do. I'm on record. If anybody comes at me, I'm on record.
I mean, you do have a popped collar, but you are bringing diversity, and I want to say the two seems like separate things, but you're bringing it together.
Nope.
I have a popped collar on my Zaddy jacket that I bought at Costco, and it is bringing me great joy.
It looks great.
It's a $19.99 steal from Costco, and it looks great. And I know exactly why it was sold at Costco and why such a nice jacket was there, is because the pockets where you would put your hands are like slightly on my back. So in order to put my hands in the pockets, I have to reach my hands farther back, like past where the armholes are, and that's where the pocket holes start.
Yes, and like Morpheus.
And it needs to be said, if people can't see this, that the two front pockets on the front of the shirt or sweatshirt look like they're so far out they count as cleavage.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a good look.
Thank you. Here it is.
Yes, sir.
Two stray dogs caused $350,000 of damage when they broke into a Texas car dealership. This video is... it is one of the most beautiful videos I've ever seen.
Good.
I will read a little bit. This was on Business Insider.
Two dogs in a car dealership. Great.
This was written by the Associated Press. Thank you, Associated Press. Here it is. A pair of strays have landed in the doghouse after being caught on video, causing more than $250,000 worth of damage at a Houston car dealership. One dog, described as a bull terrier mix, was captured in early December, and the second, whose breed was not immediately known, was caught December 31st, KTRK-TV reported. Both dogs are being held by the Houston Animal Control Shelter, Bark. The dogs were captured on surveillance video, scratching the paint and tearing the bumpers off of vehicles in the lot at G Motors.
Crap.
Okay. They believe that the dogs entered the lot by crawling under a fence and they were chasing stray cats that were hiding under the vehicles. Quote,
classic dog stuff.
It's classic. And we have never seen something like this. Dogs attacking cars and causing damage, Ficori told KTRK. I just want all my customers to know that everything is taken care of. And, you know, we feel for these dogs, to be honest. But they're in good hands, so we don't have to worry about them right now. They can be adopted or whatever the city of Houston wants to do.
Yeah.
I love when he just says that. What do they want to do? So the video is, it is amazing. First off, these dogs, not super big dogs. Not like, not the dog you would imagine.
Not like a giant dog.
Who is ripping an actual bumper off of a fully off the car. So there's one, and the video, like at the news, like the KTRK video is the interviews, cut in interviews with the guys. And they're like, it seems like it's like the light brown dog is the one who loves the bumpers. And then the black dog is just barking them on. And you see in the video that it's just one little black dog. He's up on the hood. And then this brown dog, and he's just barking at the brown dog, like, go, 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 go. And the brown dog is just ripping, just grabbing underneath the bumper and pulling and pulling and pulling until the bumper comes clean off. And then they go to another car and just start doing it to another car. They did it to, like, a dozen cars.
That's incredible.
Isn't that amazing? And it was just the one brown dog. The other dog was just on top of the car barking at him, like telling
just
him
his hype man.
Just his hype man. Like, rip it off! Rip it off! Rip it off!
Listen, if we've learned one thing from the 60s, we need to prosecute the dog on the hood and not the one tearing the bumpers off. After Manson, we need to hold the other one responsible.
This also makes me realize that I could rip a bumper off a car, which is something I never really considered possible.
This little, it's not a big dog. It's not a big dog. I think you could, if you just, I think you'd need gloves on. I'm surprised the dog didn't cut his mouth. Maybe Diddy didn't care, but it does also make sense that it was like a stray cat hiding underneath the car, and he decided the way to get to him was to slowly rip the car apart.
I'm sure my anarchist friends are already making this video into a statement about capitalism. Mm-hmm.
They need to. And I can't wait to watch this video. Is it on AP? Can I go to Associated Press? Oh, heck yeah. I'm going to watch this and just laugh my buns off.
We will post it on the Instagram, The Bananas Podcast, if you want to go over and sign up for that.
Did they see what the dogs' names were?
They're strays, so they didn't have dogs, so they called them Little Brown Dog and Little Black Dog.
I want to pet those dogs. Somebody adopt those dogs. One, get the hype man dog. If it was the black dog, get that dog's going to cheer you on no matter what. If you start Pilates class, that dog's going to be outside looking through the window, barking you
on. Yeah, this is a... That dog's a personal trainer. Like, yes. You're definitely going to be doing burpees because the dog told you. Not unlike the Son of Sam. I'm just going to bring everything back to serial killers.
That's fine.
Just
half
what I'm doing this
murder
time.
Bananas. It's a very smart thing to do with this crowd. When I first moved to LA, like maybe a month or two in, I lived walking distance to Elysian Park, which is a great park you can go visit. Our farting benches that Kurt and I put up in there. It's a great place to fart. I had a friend call me in hysterics. She had a new dog. She had a puppy and an old dog, like a 12-year-old dog, same type of dog. And she called me like crying, saying that the old one ran away from her on a walk in Elysian Park. And like, could I come and help? I said, sure. Like, so I'm looking for this dog. And I hurry and I find her. And she's so upset. She's carrying her puppy. And we're calling this dog's name. And, you know, she's calling friends, and it was chipped, but it didn't have like an Apple AirTag. It didn't have any of that stuff to like track it. And so she kind of was like, what do you think's going to happen? And, you know, you don't want to be like, you don't want to say anything negative. So I'm like, it'll work out. It'll work out. And we take this long walk. And she said, like, it was 15 minutes into the walk. It was hot as hell that day. And the dog, who was like off leash and a very good dog, just sprinted away in another direction. And when we walked back to her car, it took, like I said, like, I don't know, maybe half an hour of looking and screaming for this dog, another half hour of like telling people about it. And then we get back to the car. The dog was sitting on the bumper in the shade. The dog just did not want to walk anymore and was like, nope, and just yeeted back to the car and sat on her bumper on the shady side of her car. Waiting.
No.
Like a and wise old man.
And the dog knew her car.
The dog ran away from her back to the car to sit in the shade. It was like, I am not walking in this desert hellscape. The young one can do it.
What's the dog's names? Did you?
I don't want to give the names because
they might be famous dogs.
They might be well-known dogs. This is correct.
Okay. I'm Googling.
But they were classic old man dog names. I'll say that.
I have Zelda is our dog, and she just turned 11. Wow. And she, in her old age, she's just become so much more vocal about everything. And so, you know, Lauren and I work from home, so we're always just there with the dog. And it's become this weird thing because if you make eye contact with Zelda, Zelda will then not stop like crying to like have you play. And so like we'll do it once or twice a day, but you have to continue writing and you have to keep working. And so it's this weird thing now where the dog, I'll have to track where the dog is in the room. And then if I'm like looking around, just make sure to not look in that corner, because the moment you look wherever the dog is, it's like, and it's just like really insistent until you like get up and play with her. And it's just come on in the last year that she like started this.
Me and my partner Linus moved into a new house that has a cat.
Hell yeah.
And we have that thing that couples should have when they've been together a long enough time. We make noises at each other. Mm-hmm. It used to be bird noises. We'd go, Rashaw, Rashaw. And then we'd recall, recall. That's how we could tell if we're home or somebody broke in. But like we started making cat noises and we would go, brow, 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 brow. And then Linus says, brow, 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 brow. And we could tell we were both home. But now there's a really vocal cat in the house that will come down the stairs like like it's a cruising couple, like Three's Company, comes down the stairs and gives this very like brow. It's this very like we want to have a swingers situation. But the cat has my favorite thing is the cat knows it can play us for pets more than other people in the house who have already been too smart. The cat will come up and just put one paw on top of your hand, like it's an intervention. Just like, brow. we need to talk. And then we just pet the cat, but then like it's in our side room and our axolotl is now eyeing us for not giving the axolotl attention and is watching us pet the cat. And it's a whole weird situation. We've got a whole poly family going on right now, and we need to talk out boundaries.
Laurel Bristol also has an axolotl.
Oh,
Olive is obsessed with axolotls right now.
Ours is named Ged, which I didn't know was a reference to Earthsea, which is a series of like fantasy books. And every time I tell somebody, they're like, Ged, which... And they're like, oh, like Earthsea. And I'm
every
like,
time, Andy, no. Every time,
every single time.
I'm a highly doubt everyone's like, oh, the Earth series. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Not every time. You two are from Baltimore.
Also, you live in Portland, so maybe it is every time.
I'm in Seattle, right?
Oh,
we know a little bit more. But we're all from both you two and me grew up in Baltimore. So we know GED as a GED, not GED. But an option out of high school. But anyway. Right. Seattle.
Oh, you everyone thinks
Three's Company. Sorry, you mentioned Three's Company, which is so funny because I was watching. I have a digital antenna on a TV, and in LA, you get like 70 channels, and whoa, they start great. They start CBS, NBC, Fox, KTLA, watchable channels. Then you get Buzzer, which is only game shows. And then you get into all the different, you get 10 Korean channels, 10 Armenian channels, 10 Russian channels. And you go up the line, and they have this one that just, I swear to God, all it does is play Three's Company. And I don't know if you've watched Three's Company lately, but when it was Mr. Roper, not Mr. Furley, was their neighbor. You yeah. talked about like a neighbor
yeah.
coming
yeah.
in. There are, it became a bit where Mr. Roper would make fun of the main three, the three that are company, and then turn and look directly into camera and laugh. Like, he would break the fourth wall, and he would be like, yeah, I don't know about you, Jack, but I'm not going to do that. And then turn, look into camera, and like bounce his shoulders and and it just became...
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, I remember the shoulders. I don't remember him staring at the camera. I just all, you know, dead I just always... I think that's like that era that somebody would just come in, say their catchphrase, and it's a solid like minute yes. of people clapping.
Yes. I'm going to find clips of this. It's got to be on YouTube. But yeah, Mr. Roper would just make a joke and then turn, sometimes turn fully around and look at the camera behind him and just start laughing. And the audience just would go wild. We need to get back to that.
We really do. I would love that. There is not enough breaking of the fourth wall in sitcoms anymore.
Nope.
I remember that sitcom having the most innuendo. If yes. it's the one, yeah, the most innuendo yeah. I'd see just like in the middle of the day when I was sick home from school,
yes.
and just watching this like Randy. Let's use the word Randy because that's like the era you use Randy, like Benny mm-hmm. Hill or.
Yeah, just horny 70s and 80s comedy. It's probably best left in the past.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Anywho, here's one for you. This Kate Donald sent this in. Thank you, Kate. Paul Bosco sent this in, mm-hmm. and so did hundreds and hundreds of Bananimals. This was Channel 6 WBRC.com, written by that swinging WBRC staff. Best in the biz. Man strips, jumps into fish tank at Bass Pro Shops in Alabama.
Woohoo!
Fantastic. Fantastic. This was in Leeds, Alabama. For Bananimals around the world, or international Bananimals, Alabama is one of the most unknown states.
It is. I agree with that.
People, it's in the South. It's in the deep South. Gulf Shores is a very nice beach. But basically, it's football, Talladega. That's it. Like, it's a very unknown state.
Catfish.
And, the catfish. Ooh. Get some fried catfish. This guy might have just been trying to put them on the map. Man is in custody in Leeds, Alabama, and facing multiple charges after stripping and jumping into a fish tank at the Bass Pro Shops in Leeds.
Incredible. All right.
The incident happened Thursday night when the suspect struck a pole in the store's parking lot in a car. Police say he then stripped down, completely nude, ran into the store, and jumped into their fish tank. And this is like a huge fish tank. Like, I don't know, 10,000 gallons, let's say. It's humongous, and he's fully nude, and he was hanging out with the bass. The 42-year-old wow. man, which is definitely a grown man. When I first read this, I'm like, college prank, classic yeah. stuff. This is going to be so funny. And then I'm like, no, this is a grown man who could have a 21-year-old son easily. The 42-year-old man stood under the waterfall, briefly leaving the tank to berate the police who had been called to the scene before returning to the water.
I but like man. It. Yeah, I like it that he's berating. He's like, what do you guys want? Huh? Leave me alone. I'm just taking a bath.
Why
taking a bath with the
here?
Bass.
If It's very supposed to do it.
It's a very natural thing. He's returned to the water once he came.
Yeah. But also, I every time I've been in one of these places, I'm like, it would be fun as hell to jump in that thing. Every time.
It would be.
I can't remember. I think I saw this story. Was it unrelated to... I saw an article was maybe an unrelated Bass Pro Fishing Shop where somebody got caught in like a planter, like their whole body was lodged in a planter. Was this the same guy or?
I don't think it was the same guy, but that was also in Alabama, I believe. Yeah, he got half his body stuck in a vase and then he got pulled out and his pants came off. He was indignant. That guy was like, you're like, you got stuck in here, bud.
I just saw a video on Instagram of a drunk guy at a wedding who got into a vase and then got stuck. And he was also very indignant. He was like wasted and just being like, look, yeah, I can't. He's like very mad at people. Like, I can't stand up. He's like, you're going to have to get a hammer. Like, so snotty about it. And then they just had to hammer the vase apart.
I feel like it's a challenge to a dude's masculinity to get taken down by something so feminine.
Yes. Yeah.
So immediately they're indignant about this. How dare I get trapped in this?
Yes.
This woman hole.
Yeah. Also, it's like I would have just started calling it vase. Vase and vase. It's like as America, we just need to figure out. I was working on a show once, and we were in a big dumb mansion. We were going to shoot at this location. And half the crew was calling it a foyer, and half was calling it a foyer. And finally, the director, this guy Kyle, was like, all right, everybody stop right now. Are we calling this location the foyer or the foyer? And we all did a raise of hands, and we ended up on foyer. And we were like, okay, now no more foyer. It's foyer. I feel like we need to do that with vase and vase.
Oh, no, I think that happened with that article, is that like... one of the articles was calling it a vase, and the other one was calling it, like, it was clearly a large planter that was a vase.
Right.
But they called it an urn.
Weird.
Which, a plant urn?
Yeah, it's like trying to masculine it up. But then it just sounds like you just fucked up a funeral.
Yes. Very impressive in its own way. Here we go. The 42-year-old man then stood under the waterfall, briefly leaving the tank to break the police, who had been called to the scene, before he returned to the water. The man then eventually climbed over the side of the aquarium, fell onto the floor, and gave police a chance to nab him. The man was reportedly in the water for a little over 5 minutes before police arrived. That's a good swim.
That's a good swim.
Good.
5 minutes? Hell yeah.
5 minutes, and he's just holding on to the front. His legs are out. He is, you know, naked as the day he was born. He was taken into custody by Leeds police and transported to an area hospital. While in the police car, he also damaged the back door of the vehicle.
Yes.
He is facing the following charges. I mean, good for Best in the Biz, Channel 6, WBRC.com for just listing with bullet points the charges this gentleman is facing. Public lewdness, disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, 2 counts of criminal mischief, 1, 2 counts of reckless endangerment. They got him. He lived the dream.
I was wondering if there was going to be any count of like abuse of an animal. Because there are living animals in there, but
bass.
I guess he did not. He did not harass any bass.
But like, what constitutes public lewdness in a state like Alabama? It seems that like it would just be any sock that's below the knee.
Yeah, if he had been wearing a Crimson Tide hat in that pool, they would have been like, "That's fine. That's honestly kick ass, dude. You
that's honestly awesome. We're pretty psyched about that.
If
full time, brother.
If he did come out of there with a holding like a gar, they would have just been like, you know what? Charges drop. Charges drop.
If he was just going noodling and he just came out with just a fish on his arm, like with his hand down its throat.
I'll be honest, I like the idea of like a southern Casa Bonita where you have a guy jump nude into a Bass Pro Fishing Shop display.
Yes.
I mean, I like it. I like it.
I think that's a great idea, especially if you could shoot like non-lethals at the guy in there. So you just dive and then everybody's just firing away at somebody. That would be really fun.
Yeah, there's like a little hidden cave with like a moonshine distillery. You know, like all the Casa Bonita stuff, but updated for like Alabama.
It's shocking there hasn't been a branded content horror movie of zombies in a Bass Pro Outfitters or Cabela's. Mm-hmm. Like, it's shocking that that doesn't exist.
There was a large section in Stuber.
I saw Stuber with you.
Yeah, Stuber has like a big section in a Bass Pro Shop. Or at least they did in the script. I don't know. Maybe it didn't make it into the movie.
I think so. I think it did. I went down to Mississippi, which for our international animals, touches Alabama. I was in Purvis, Mississippi. I was dating Purvis. A woman there about 15 or so years ago. It was my first time visiting. And her sister's, her older sister's husband was a bit of a good old boy redneck. And I could tell he was sizing me up to see who this, you know, this Yankee from Brooklyn, what he was up to. I could feel it the whole day. But they invited me. It was really hot to go swimming. There was a zip line over the Black Creek, which is nearby. And so when we get there, it's this actually really pretty area deep in the woods. And it had like a sandy beach. But then it was just a creek. It was like bigger than a stream, smaller than a river, no big deal. And the zip line was just an upside down BMX handlebars on a wire. So there's no like pulley or there's, it's just you get on one end, it's just metal on metal, and then you drop into 3.5 feet of water.
Oh, so you, and literally the handlebars just come off with you when you drop.
Well, they clang at the end, but then there's...
Oh, they're actually on. They're on the metal. Okay.
That's right. So it was, you know, it was fun. I did it a couple of times because, again, I'm trying to fit in. I'm trying to make a good... I'm trying to present myself well. And I'm like, are there gators in here? And they're like, yeah, could be. Definitely could be. There probably are. And so they, the whole family's out there, and there's a little guy. There's like a one-year-old kid in a diaper, and he's swimming. And at some point, the little kid trips and falls in the sand and gets sand all over his little wet body, and he just loses it because you know that's pretty uncomfortable.
It totally is.
I'm like sitting in the water, I'm like, this is my chance to show solidarity to this kid and win everybody over and get a laugh. So I walk over and I just face plant all the way, arms out like sand angel, face down, stand up, and I'm just covered head, like face to feet in sand. And immediately I'm like, this may have been a bad choice. The little kid sees me and just starts screaming and crying louder, like scared to death of the sand monster. All the like brothers and sisters and in-laws are looking at me like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? And I'm like, oh, okay, this was the wrong choice.
So I
just like quickly like scurry back into the water, dunk myself a couple times, wash it off. And I was like, okay, everybody seemed to move on. Nobody laughed. Nobody thought it was interesting or entertaining at all.
People thought you made a mistake.
People were like, this guy's a crazy person. Why is she dating this monster from the north? And they didn't say anything else for this today, but then every single time I visited, for the, like maybe three more times, he would bring it, the brother-in-law would bring it up every single time of how weird it was, how it scared the shit out of the kid. I was like, wow.
You made an impression.
Choices. I made huge impression. Maybe the kid is still afraid of sand. Who knows?
I like to think that it's like a southern-northern thing. They're like, don't bring your pratfalls down here. We're like pies to the face and nothing else. Bring the ground to us. We're not going to the ground.
I'll tell you what, you answer iron like a phone, we're laughing. We're laughing out loud.
You got a pun? We'll take a pun any day, but pratfalls, get them out!
You got springy eyes coming off of those glasses. That's a northern thing. That steel is from Pittsburgh. Don't bring that down here.
That's what it felt like in every way. A true nightmare.
Growing up in Baltimore, we always had like rope swings were always like this mythical thing.
Yes.
Like it was always like a friend of a friend of a friend's buddy who put it up. And then it was just like never the amount of water that it should be.
That was the same with Jersey. It was never the amount of water, and the rope was never long enough.
It was always like some pirate ship looking rope, and I just no idea where it came from. It was as, you know, as mythical an urban legend.
We literally had a rope swing. There's a place called Ecom Evans, which was a military base around the corner from my house. It was in Wall, New Jersey. And there was a right off the road, right off Marconi Road, was just like a pipe, and the pipe came under the road and then emptied into what was probably less than 3 feet deep. Like maybe 6 feet across and 4 feet wide. And someone was like, rope swing. Oh yeah, rope swing. And it was like this short little rope you would swing for four milliseconds.
6 inches, yeah.
And then drop in and then quickly like bring your feet to your chest because you didn't want to like break your back.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's only runoff
from a military base.
Oh, yeah. That's growing up in Baltimore. We grew up near Herring Run, and I could never figure out where a run was in the amount of water. Like, is it above a stream or below? I know it's below a river. I don't know if it's above a stream. I think it's a little bit above a stream.
I think it's below a stream and above a creek.
And much like apartment complexes and condos on the East Coast, Herring Run has never had herring. No fish named after an apartment complex has ever been near that apartment complex.
You also just don't hear run that many places. That's like a very mid-Atlantic term. You don't really see, but like so many subdivisions are like something run, Willow Run, Thoroughbred Run.
Anytime I would bring it up, somebody's like, herring don't run. And I'm just like, I'm well aware.
We know. We're just trying to rope swing, dude. So shut up.
Shut up.
I was just listening to your other episode, Scotty. And I heard that you would do a front flip. And I like, for some reason, I was going to City College and the bus stop I got off on was at Clifton Park, and this is all local for, maybe y'all know, but it was like a golf course. And for whatever reason, I decided to amuse the people on the bus by doing a front flip onto the golf course every time I got off the bus.
Yeah.
So much like you, I chose the front flip.
You chose comedy. Yeah, you chose to do a backsplat front flip, which it's still, again, they hate it in Mississippi, but they can't get enough in Vermont.
All right. Let me tease us into a break here.
Tease us into
kiddos. Western Australian woman, 62, permitted to have sperm removed from her dead husband.
As she should. All right, come back for more on bananas.
And folks, we are back. Scotty, got any shout outs?
I do. Murder Banana. A Laura, which is EH-Laura, a Laura is how she helped me pronounce the name, wants to shout out her irksome baby brother, Patrick, who launched his own vintage shop called Keep Livin' Vintage that supplies vintage clothing for all genders and also stuff for around the house in Goffstown, New Hampshire. You can check out Patrick's shop at Keep Livin' Vintage on Instagram. That's Livin' without a G. Keep
just like petting in Scotty's website.
Scotty's getting petting.dog. Jesse Zamora wants to shout out his brother Alex Zamora for starting his own videography company that films real estate with drones. That's cool.
Oh, hell yeah.
Alex is absolutely killing it. His company is called Cinefly. And Realtor Bananimals. And we have quite a few. Stop taking pictures of yourself for billboards and bus stops. We're cool with it. We'll just want the house. And hire Alex at Cinefly Films on Instagram instead. Congrats,
and
Alex.
And I bet you, you know what I bet you he can do? He can do an overshot of the house from 200 feet up, zoom down, and just fly that thing right through the front door. Wow. Fly through all the rooms and right out the back door. Perfect for Instagram, folks. Wow. I don't know if he can do that. I'm just saying he probably can.
I bet he can.
I guess I should, this is my tiny shout out. Scotty, when you're petting dogs thing, my friend has an Instagram called Eric Pointing at Cats. My friend in my friend in New York, his girlfriend, are not photos, like, takes pictures of him pointing at cats in bodegas. And I'm like, I find myself going to it a lot, but it reminds me a lot. I don't think you, I, you know, I'm not saying that you ripped off the idea or this is a knockoff of it. You know, it is a New York thing, so I'm tending to support you more, Scotty. So
fine. You can support all animals.
There's
That's
room.
What we're about.
There's room for all ideas here in this world.
Jod gave me two hands for a reason: one to point at cats and one to pet good boy dogs. Cheyenne, who sends so many great stories. Cheyenne, Wonderlusters has sent so many stories. Wants to shout herself out for being 2 years alcohol free. Congratulations. And similarly, and equally impressive, Sarah Washburn is 1,000 days sober, consecutive days sober.
Nice.
That's an important distinction, I guess. That is incredible. Go for 2,000, we say. And for any bananimals who are trying to sober up, you can always try to dry 69. If you go 69 days without drinking and you really do it and you're very honest, I will send you a bumper sticker that says, I've mastered the dry 69.
Yes.
That's all I got, Pretty B.
I'm about 7 months into not drinking. And
how's it going?
Good. I've gotten really into fake beers, which, like, is the, like, industry of fake beers has really sprung up. People are really turning to
it
the
really
non-alcoholic
is.
Ones.
There is a lot. I went to the, like, a local liquor store here, and it was one entire case of the five cases they had was non-alcoholic beers. And I was like, this has really exploded.
I will say the thing that's confusing to me is the non-alcoholic liquors. They have non-alcoholic liquors, which I'm a little confused by.
That's
but
weird.
I'm always annoyed that there isn't like a 22 of fake beer. You know, like I guess it's not really a fake beer is not really an impulse buy.
Right.
You aren't just like randomly at a convenience store and you're like, I'm gonna get so fucking sober tonight. I might join a church.
No, but also you just want to have something in your hand and be drinking something.
That's all.
A double deuce would be perfect for that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of really Best Aid Brewing out of Portland. I'm not from Portland. I don't know why I need to clarify. Best Aid Brewing out of Portland just has a really good IPA, but I mean, it's mostly Athletic. IPA has been good. But.
All right.
Yeah.
You guys want to hear about this story here?
Please.
Western Australian woman permitted to have sperm removed from her dead husband. This is more fascinating than it is. Hilarious. This was in The Guardian, and it was written by Royce Kermelovs.
Whoa, best in the business?
Definitely. Royce Kermelovs? Maybe Kermelovs. Here it is.
Sounds cool.
A 62-year-old woman has been given permission by the Western Australian Supreme Court to remove sperm from her dead husband for possible use in posthumous fertilization. The woman made an urgent court application after the death of her 61-year-old husband late last year. Her husband's body was taken to Sir Charles Gairdner Hospital, but the court heard the woman was forced to apply for an order after the hospital did not promptly make a designated officer available to handle her request for sperm to be removed from her husband's body and stored while it still remained viable. Hearing the application the next day, the court heard the couple. Since the testing, the man's sperm found it remained viable.
Wow.
The court heard that a 20-year-old cousin has volunteered to be a surrogate for the couple in an IVF procedure, but they lived overseas, and the woman said she believed that the couple would have been legally required to live in the country for a period of time before going ahead. Work commitments, pandemic. The death of the woman's mother-in-law meant the couple missed the opportunity to move. Okay. In granting the application, Judge Fiona Seward allowed the woman to remove the sperm but not use it, as that would require a separate court order. Western Australia does not currently allow posthumous fertilization. To take the next step and use the material, the woman must apply to have it transferred to another jurisdiction that allowed the procedure.
Hmm.
This is fascinating. Okay.
I'm sure lawyers would understand this. Is the idea that, like, if you did do this, if you got knocked up with your dead husband's sperm, that you could then maybe, and had a child, that you could maybe be entitled to something that you wouldn't have already as just the wife?
I know. I think it's literally that they can't consent. I think that's all it is legally.
They're dead.
You're so pro-life that you're willing to suck sperm out of a dead corpse. I'm saying keep that baby. That's a miracle, baby. Let's not talk about God putting a baby in Mary. Let's talk about someone sucking them.
You know what? I think they probably did it surgically. I don't think they sucked it out.
Get the wet dry vac out of the shed and go, all right, what's this guy's name? Tony, here we go.
There's probably an Australian guy. He's used to just sucking poison out of everybody's bites because it's Australian. Everything
bites. They're always doing. It's just a guy. He's there. He's ready to go. That's all I do, mate.
It's Western Australia. There's probably like a finite amount of sperm on that coast. That's the only thing I could think, right? Maybe it's rare.
I've never been. I've never been to like Perth or anything, but I've always wanted to go. I hear it's very much like the Wild West.
Can't wait to go.
We got to go. I would love to tour Australia.
Oh my gosh, I know. But yeah, so to me, it's like, I'm missing something here, because to me it seems totally fine. I'm like, yes, she was married to the guy. She wanted a kid. It wasn't working out. He died tragically. She wants a kid. That all seems good.
No, it all seems good.
From the guy's
point
of view, it's like, he's dead.
Yeah. He might have also signed up for it pre-death. I think the thing is about the legality of, there was a window in which they could do it and they were not allowed it. And maybe he already signed off on it or gave a nod when he was passing away.
But also think about the fact that there's a law about it, that there's a law stopping posthumous fertilization, which means that someone wrote the law, which means that this is like something that they've had to deal with before in the past.
Something happened.
And that there's other places that have already had to deal with it. And we're like, yeah, no, we're super down with it. Come on over to Georgia.
Comes to Georgia. It's in Central Australia. It's right in the middle.
Good luck trying to Google the laws on any of this.
I think it's a miracle. Exactly.
Yes,
I'm very excited. Interesting videos.
I mean, like, I'm not excited that the woman's husband died. That's obviously sad. But
We're not excited about that. We love diversity, and we are not excited about dead husbands.
You heard me say I support diversity earlier, right, everybody? Yeah.
Yes.
Wait till that child asks for the birds and the bees talk.
Just birds.
Why is it the birds and the bees? Because it seems like you would choose two animals that at least had like visible penises and vaginas to talk to kids about birds and the bees. Instead, you're going to talk to them about one animal that has just a slot that is an everything slot, a cloaca. That's a bird. Mm-hmm. And then a bee is just I don't even know how. Do they just pop off a part of themselves and a new bee grows? Yeah, none of these animals. It should be like the monkeys and the dogs. And that should be the talk.
I feel like the birds and the bees, I think just, you know, it's natural. And also that's where all the porn was just in the woods.
That's a bolt. I like, it's just because birds and the bees are in the woods and that's where porn is. I'm pretty sure it's because birds and bees pollinate flowers. And
okay,
so
fine.
I think the birds and the bees are both the ding-dongs, and then the flower is the... I think it's the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees.
So
right?
Birds and bees are penises and flowers are vaginas?
That's what I think.
That makes more sense.
I mean, slightly more sense.
It's just
a
cool.
Furry, fat, flying penis.
My mom taught health and wellness, so we had no birds and the bees. We just got down to the facts.
Oh, yeah.
What happens?
I had a coloring book, I think.
That's all you need.
I only made it to second year art school. We didn't even draw the birds and the bees. We just got to the blocks, the vases, and the drapery.
Which also is a sex talk.
That's true.
That's a non-binary sex talk.
Yeah. Andy, where did you film your special?
I did it at Eastburn in Portland. That is a really... No... Stop doing
Portland's
this, okay?
Own Andy Awansio.
This is considered slander. That is like saying I'm from Arbutus when I'm from Baltimore. Don't dare do this. You know what this means.
All right, Seattle. Where did you record it?
I did record it in Portland at the Eastburn, which is a really great bar, and I can recommend a few venues down in Portland. But yeah, I recorded at the Eastburn. And it's like this really great basement kind of room, and it gave this old school kind of sound to the recording, which
That's
really
cool.
Felt like it fit the label. Mm-hmm. But I went back and listened to your album, Kurt. Now I'm like on a label, and I feel like I need to support the other people mm-hmm. on the label.
It's nice to do.
Yeah, I think I asked you, Kurt, I was like, are they good? And you were like, yeah. As if you were going to tell me something and I wasn't going to record an album with Kill Rock Stars. But yeah, it was a really good time, and it sounds really fun, and I was really happy with it. And yeah, I think it's a, you know, listen to it.
Digital downloads? Do they still do records or CDs or anything, or is it all digital downloads?
It's just digital right now. There wasn't any like the physical release would have pushed it like 6 weeks, which maybe would have been a good idea in retrospect, because I was on the Zoom call with them and I joked about getting it out, that it was important to get it out in time for Christmas because people would buy it for their kids, and nobody reacted on the Zoom call. It right. just sounded like I was an egotistical psychopath.
There's an urban legend that I've never had fully confirmed, but there's the song "The Final Countdown." It's that like hair metal mm-hmm. song by the band Europe.
Yeah, love that song.
Yeah, it's hilarious. The urban legend that I've heard, and if any bananimals work in the record industry and confirm any of this, the story goes as it was 1999, and there was going to turn the year 2000, and the band Europe, who was really an 80s band, was like, I bet a ton of people are going to listen to The Final Countdown as this millennium ends and the next one starts. And so they told their manager to print a million copies of the CD single Final Countdown. And the manager faxed this to the record label, but messed up the decimal point.
No.
And they only made 100,000, and the band was furious, and then they only sold 400 copies.
So, an awesome story. Where did you hear the story? It's a very specific story.
It was an urban legend. It's something I've heard, like, I've heard it twice, and I haven't heard it in 20 years or whatever, but I remember hearing it that they were like immediately furious at the manager, and then it sold so bad they were like grateful that they didn't have to pay the back cost of printing 1 million CDs. So yeah, if anybody has ever heard this, let me know, but it's been floating around in my life for 23 years, so let me know.
It sounds a lot like that ET cartridge thing you would hear about, like all the Atari ET games being buried out in the desert or something.
That is true.
The one weird urban legend that I thought was just, I remember from being a kid, that it's not an urban legend, but for some reason I had it in my head that it was illegal to hurt a praying mantis.
Right.
Oh yeah, I that they were endangered or something, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I have no
idea. I can't
imagine
they're endangered because I see them all the time.
We get them in LA. Yeah, we have a lot of them.
I had one that had gotten on my car, on my bumper, and then we drove somewhere, and then we stopped, and then Olive was like, "There's a praying mantis on the bumper," and I was like, "All right." And then it was like he's just been hanging on for that whole ride, and he was there.
He's gesturing at your child to tear off the bumper. Just two of them.
There it is. It's a callback to the first one.
It's a herald.
Senya, in honor of Andy's new special, Better Living Through Femistry, that all the Bananimals should digitally download right away, here's one about live performance.
Okay.
Sarah Elizabeth sent this in. Thank you, Sarah Elizabeth. Actor Andrew Scott halted Hamlet soliloquy after theater goer used a laptop to send an email.
Oh, man.
This was in The Guardian. This was by Betsy Reed for The Guardian. She is the best in the business. To BC or not to BCC? That is the question.
Wow.
Facing a theater goer watching Andrew Scott's performance of Hamlet, the actor best known as Fleabag's hot priest, has revealed he halted the renowned soliloquy in Shakespeare's play when an audience member took out a laptop to send emails. This is so crazy.
This is so wild.
A whole laptop.
The actor decided. It would have been better if he just booted up a desktop computer with a CRT monitor in.
That's like trigger happy TV stuff. That's good stuff. The actor decided not to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous etiquette.
Wow.
During his run in the 2017 production of Hamlet at London's Almeida Theatre, for which he earned an Olivier nomination. Speaking to the Happy, Sad, Confused film podcast, Scott said there was no way he could continue with the speech and refused to resume until the man put his laptop away. Quote, when I was playing Hamlet, a guy took out his laptop. Not his phone, his laptop. While I was in the middle of to be or not to fucking be, said the actor, who said he was thought he was the offending audience member was sending emails. I was pausing on the stage like, get on with it. And I was like, there's no way. I stopped for the ages. A woman next to the laptop user appeared to alert him to the situation, and he finally put the laptop away.
Crazy. Oh, so he didn't break character. He did it. Okay.
He just
waited and stared at the guy.
Yes.
It's that like, alas, poor Yurik. I knew him well to not be on a fucking tablet. What comes in that stream of dreams must give us pause your goddamn cell phone.
It would be amazing. Actually, wait a second. I like what you're doing, Andy. That would be pretty incredible to do the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's just chastising people in the crowd for different things. I was racing for that to be or not to be CC. I was in my head. I was rushing for it. And then you just said it. And I was just like, all right, come in. Sorry.
Yep.
That's why they're the best in the biz. Well, thank you so much, Andy, for being here. Plug away. Where can people find you?
You can find me at Andy Awancio on all the things, Blue Sky Threads, still on X, out of spite, on Facebook and all of the things. And yeah, a bunch of shows coming up and yeah, but yeah, go listen to the album. I also have a EP out on Radland Records, small independent label from LA.
Awesome.
Your hometown.
Oh,
the Maryland pride surges through your veins, and I respect it. Thanks for coming back to Bananas.
Thanks for having me.
Bananas. Bananas is an Exactly Right Media production.
Our producer and engineer is Katie Levine.
The Catchy Bananas theme song was composed and performed by Kahan.
Artwork for Bananas was designed by Travis Millard.
And our benevolent overlords are the great Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark.
And Lisa Maggot is our full human, not a robot intern.
Bananas.